everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan. And we are from reverse. I don't know. Every once in a while, I feel like doing it different.
Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
And we're from reversethemes.com. If you would like to say, maybe describe how I should introduce myself at the beginning of the next podcast, or have any questions, comments, or maybe shows or ideas for topics we could talk about, you can email us at reversethemes.com, or you could go onto our Discord and, you know, post any suggestions, comments, complaints, or praise there.
And this episode of the podcast, we are going to be talking about some more new shows because it was a really stacked season. And then I will promise not to forget to talk about shows that we finished, because on the last episode of the podcast, I said that we were going to do that and then promptly completely forgot about it. So this time, it's not going to happen. Definitely 99% sure.
Mostly probable.
But first.
So, not a lot of news in the Type Moon Minute. This month, it's near the end of the year, so they're probably just resting up for the Christmas event and then all the New Year's stuff. So we only really have one piece of news, which is the main FGO event was Grail Front, White Castle in the day. And Black Castle at night. Yes, like, we both laughed when I said the title, because, like, White Castle, for someone who is, like, what is the penetration of White Castle over the U.S.? It's definitely in the Northeast. I don't know.
I mean, no, it's definitely in the Midwest.
Okay.
You know, I mean, they made a movie about going to White Castle.
Yes.
So
Harold and Kumar, yes.
I mean, obviously that was a long time ago now, but I really hope that someone is photoshopping pictures of these characters eating White Castle.
You know what it is? It was like somebody recently mentioned Culver's, which is very much more of a like a regional like thing. They're like, there's certain chain fast food chains that are like everywhere in the US, and then there's certain fast food chains that are like, they're in this region. And like, all we could think is the White Castle hamburger franchise. This one mainly revolves around Ptolemies. Ptolemies, who went on to found the Ptolemies Empire in Egypt. After Alexander's empire broke up. And I only say that because there were like four famous Ptolemies in Alexander's army. And so, like, as somebody like joked, it's like the John Smith of like, you know, Macedonia. It was like, you know, Ptolemies. Which Ptolemies, Frank? They also did have Theseus and Sassoon try to kill Nobunaga, who was like a famous gun monk, and they did not have playable, but they introduced Typhoon. And the gimmick is the Grail Fronts are kind of a different FGO battle. It was more like a whole bunch of connected battles on a map. But this one, you can choose like day battles and night battles every chapter. And like if you pick the day battle or the night battle, there were like some differences with the map or enemies and placements and stuff like that. And it also plays into the theme of the event, but that's like me getting into the nitty-gritty details that would slowly put Kate to sleep. So,
you know. During the day, you get hamburgers, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And then at night, I guess, is Wendy's, because, you know, they're open late.
Well, White Castle is known for being open late as well.
Then I guess, what do you call it? Maybe Jack in a Box. They're like just famous for being like the place that like California stoners go, like at any, like just because they're open 24/7. So that's really it for this month. So theoretically, next month might be, I always say it's going to be sparse and then it's not, but it might be a little sparse up until, because I think we're probably going to record before the Christmas event comes out. And then obviously next year, it's going to be the New Year's event. And there's usually a bunch of announcements with the New Year's stream for just FGO and Typhoon in general. Like if they're going to have any new anime, or I'm guessing they're probably going to like put a date out for, you know, the actual Strange Fake TV series. I'd be surprised if that doesn't pop up then. I'd have to look if we're going to get any like Witch on a Holy Night stuff. It also depends what we record next month. I might have information about the first Witch on the Holy Night movie or not. But we will see what we have news-wise when I see you next time, Type Lunatics.
All right, so starting off with some new shows of the season, although I'm not sure Pluto counts as like a show of the season just because it's the weird Netflix model and like they dropped all the episodes. But and also they're not really like normal size episodes, but still.
I feel like at this point it's just become a tradition of just like if we catch these shows, just mentioning them because they tend to come out when the new season comes out anyhow. So just mention it then. Unless like something comes out weirdly in between seasons. And then we just, you would usually mention it like a, you know, just like a roundup episode or something.
So this is an adaptation of Urasawa's very famous manga, Pluto.
Which is in fact an adaptation of an old Astro Boy story.
Taken to a very, very different extreme. And it's a fairly short manga. It's 8 volumes. And the Netflix show is also 8 episodes. And each episode is over an hour. So essentially they're covering the entire story in, and so 1 volume an episode, which is really nice to like know that the whole story is there. I was thinking about how I haven't read Pluto in a really long time, which is the perfect way to like a watch something like this because I'm not like, I don't remember this. Like I remember the big points or whatever of the source material, but I don't remember it so specifically that I'm like worried about like the order of things or, you know, like this or that.
I was watching the first episode and my roommate came home about, I was only about a fourth in. And there's that part in the first episode where they're like, and this guy helped create peace in the Middle East. And my roommate saw that line and he's like, whoa, that's pretty big accomplishment for that guy. And I was like, nah, that's all bullshit. Like that's like the line they're selling everybody, but they're like, what actually happened there was much more complicated. And then I was like, I don't actually remember any of the details of
how complicated that was
and like what they were exactly lying about and the such, but I remember that was bullshit.
Yeah, so it's like, I feel like I'm not so strictly wedded to the source material that like I'm worried about like those sorts of things as long as like the major vibe of it is good.
Yeah, and the same thing, I remember like the general plot arc, but if you would like ask me details of episodes I haven't seen, I'd be like, probably involves Adam, maybe Uran, maybe. Pluto sometimes pops up.
And obviously, Geist. I'm not really great at pronouncing our main detective's name.
And even though I have German heritage, I'm not particularly great at pronouncing German names myself. So,
yeah. And so if you haven't read the original manga, so he is a robot who is also a detective, and there is a serial murderer running around killing both very powerful robots in the world and also like robot advocates, human advocates for like robots and like robot rights and things like that. And so in this world, it does follow like the robot rules, alleged, like theoretically robots are not to be able to harm human beings. There is one like documented case of that happening, and you know, like the sort of, I like the way that it posits it in the story, is that like they could find no anomaly there, because it was like, oh, there must be something wrong, like something is wrong with that robot's like programming, and like they could find nothing that would like lead to that. So that's sort of like the scary unknown to humanity about that case. And so yeah, so this is a story about like figuring out like what's happening, and like it all is all connected, as Al sort of alluded to like this incident that happened, and like who all was involved and why, and like what is the conspiracy? You know, like there's just a lot of like great mystery elements to it.
And there's very much I can't say it's not relevant anymore, but it was much more in the forefront that this was also a bit of a Gulf War analog when it first came out, you know, the original Pluto manga, which I think was much more in people's minds at the time. But, you know, since then, there have been no problems in the Middle East. And like,
that's right. You can't map this onto anything else.
So,
And also, I think it's just exciting because Urasawa is such a legendary manga creator at this point. But it's very rare, actually, that his series get adapted into anime. Like, the last one was Monster, and that was a long time ago at this point. So despite sort of his, you know, being such like a top tier creator, I think it's almost like one of those things where he's so top tier that they're like afraid to touch it or something. Because I think it's shocking to me that like 20th Century Boys does not have an anime. There were live action movies, but like the fact that it never got anime.
I'm just glad that it got it. As much as you want to say about Netflix, which you can make lots of criticism about Netflix. I'm not some like Netflix apologist, but I'm glad that it got like a prestige release and not a let's give it to Polygon Pictures and like.
That would never have happened.
I guess it's maybe also just because it's got the Tezuka, you know, connection as well. Maybe I'm just cynical enough. I could see like a world where they like just give it a like they promote it a lot, but they give it like a CG.
I mean, I would say that like I don't think the animation is like incredible. And there are moments that I found a little bit weird, like where I was like, oh, that looked like a little bit weird. Like, I mean, but also it's not a story that needs, not like, it's got like shonen fighting battles that like we really need. Like,
I mean, neither, I haven't watched that end, but because also the problem is most of the time in the early episodes, all of because they want to keep the identity of what the Pluto, you know, what Pluto looks like, a secret. A lot of the battles, like, we only see the aftermath, or like, oh, there's a big storm, because whenever, you know, Pluto attacks, there's like a huge, like, hurricane that appears around it. So like, it happens in the hurricane, but that's like, in the, that's not like a cost-saving thing. That's in the original manga. So like, we don't see a lot of big battle scenes, because like, the actual like fights that we see really only happen at the end, when like, now we know what Pluto looks like, so you know, we don't have to like hide, you know, its identity.
But yeah, it just feels nice. It feels like an event that it got an anime, you know, and it's like one episode of volume. It just feels like special. So yeah, if you haven't read the manga, it's a great time to pick it up. And I think the anime is adapting it seems like pretty faithfully. Their approach seems that way. So yeah, very excited to like watch the rest of it.
It's a good refresher. It's like you said, it seemed like almost, because I know this was like in development for like quite a bit, so, but maybe it came out at the best time for this, you and me, just so like I remember just enough that I remember that I liked it, but like it's been long enough that like I might still be like, oh, I forgot that happened. That was a nice, you know, surprise.
Yeah, I don't have to be too picky about it, basically. All right, moving on to the sort of other detective series of the season, which is The Apothecary Diaries. And this is kind of a medical mystery, and it takes place in a fantastical Chinese historical setting that seems really popular right now. I mean, it's like it's always been popular, but I feel like you see it a lot lately.
The thing we were discussing just before it began, I just wanted to mention this now, is it's not in strictly historical China, but as far as we saw so far, there didn't seem to be any like magic or like dragons or spirits. It just seemed to be in like not strictly historical China,
but it's that popular like the one a few seasons ago, the Raven.
Yeah, I know, but
man, why can't I think?
I know what you're talking about. I don't know.
Yeah, anyway, and that was a really fun series too. But so this is about a young woman who works as an apothecary with her father. She is kidnapped by, I don't know, some randos and sold to the castle as a servant. And she has decided that she's not going to make a fuss about it, and it's a couple of years of work for her there, and so she's trying to lay low. And like, she is literate, and so she's educated, but she kind of like tries to keep that to herself to theoretically make her life easier as she gets through this. But she cannot help herself when the prince and princess of the castle, these young infants, basically, start getting sick, and no one can figure out what's going on. And the mom, like one of the moms, is also sick and one isn't. And so there's, you know, some court drama with that. And so she leaves an anonymous tip, basically. And that gets her, of course, caught like immediately by the super duper, super handsome eunuch who runs everything. I don't know. I don't remember exactly what his job is, but.
But he's like the manager of the inner palace. he's like, he's basically like the head eunuch of the inner, where the, harem is.
And he basically sort of tricks her into revealing her literacy. And then she gets basically the opposite of what she wanted, which is like she gets a bunch of attention and then she gets pulled into basically being part of the retinue of one of the head ladies, the like favored ladies of the emperor.
Because one of the head ladies, one of the favored ladies takes her advice and the other one doesn't. So the one who doesn't, her child dies. But the one who did take her advice finds, you know, the eunuch tells her and she's like, this lady saved my kid's life. She is part of my crew.
And so that's where we sort of end the first episode. So she, you know, will get like more involved and then use her apothecary skills, like, you know, help out around the inner palace.
So, yeah, I found out that apparently this was like one of the more anticipated shows this season, because I watched the Annie Gamers. I listened to the Annie Gamers, their seasonal roundup. And apparently they also thought that we were going to like, what was it? The one, the detective one from Hitman Reborn one. That dude's like dangerous investigations or whatever.
Forbidden Deductions.
Yes.
I mean, it was fine.
Yeah.
This show was also fine. Yeah, it's a very, very popular light novel series. There's a manga adaptation of it that's also in English. I don't remember if the light novel is also now in English, but, like, I've read the first volume of the manga.
Am I much more? Am I not? And, like, I mean, I kind of like the, like, court thing and the mystery, but, like, it didn't super hook me, but nothing was super bad about it.
Yeah, I know. I find it hard to describe what I find very middle of the road of this for me. I guess I just...
Kate, aren't you going to be cool and say mid when you find mid about it? I thought you were the hip one of us who uses all the hip kid lingo.
I just couldn't do it in that moment.
Okay, that's fair.
Like I said, I also read the manga and like, thought it was just like okay. I didn't like love it or anything, and I don't know if it's the heroine, if it's like the mysteries aren't I don't know what it is. I just feel like I don't have a problem with it, but I also am like whatever. I think the heroine to me comes off a little Mary Sue, even though most of us are not like pharmacists or something. But
I watched like the first two episodes and it seems like she seems to like know what the answer is from minimal clues. Like, I feel like I'm like trying to say like, how is this different from like Sherlock Holmes? But it almost, like, they don't play up her genius, but it's also supposed to be super obvious, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, again, I feel like I don't want, like, I know people really like this series, so I don't want to make it seem like I hated it in any way. I just didn't, like, vibe with me correctly. I would say, though, in the first mystery, it's all about this white powder. Yeah. The characters are not drawn to look like that they are using that powder. So I think that's like a not helpful.
Only like I think one of them was. The other one was.
But you couldn't tell that she. You couldn't really tell that she was using it.
Because the other one was like a nursemaid that was.
Right. I feel like I wanted it to be like more obvious. Mm-hmm. But you know, she's the genius. She's the medical expert, not me. Anyway, well, let's move on. Yes. I don't know what else to say. Good. We can move on to Kingdoms of Ruin. Oh my. Okay, well, I definitely liked Apothecary Diaries better than that.
Okay, what do you call it? Your emo soul did not cry out for joy for Kingdom of Ruin.
I feel like Kingdom of Ruin, at first, I thought it was going to be fine. And then it just goes, like, so extreme so quickly because we have this young... Yeah, it's a world where there are witches and they used to be seen as like these great benevolent, you know, like
guides to humanity.
Yes. Thank you.
Almost like where the wizards were in Lord of the Rings. They were like sent by the gods to like help, like, you know, grow and like shepherd humanity.
And then humans were like, why should we listen to these witches? Why should they have power? We're just gonna take power away from them and like destroy them, and we are gonna use science and technology and bring them low, and because we love power. And we kind of start the story with this young man and his mentor, and she's like one of the last like super powerful witches, and they're being pursued, and when they get caught, everybody just does really horrible things to everybody. It's so extreme, like, that it's...
They don't just, like, kill his mentor.
No. And it's just one of those things where it's, like, they're making everybody, like, so, so, so evil to the point of it feeling farcical that they're this evil. And then that is to allow our main character to just, like, get revenge with, like, impunity. Like, it's like, oh, well, why would I care if he is, like, going around murdering all these people?
And I haven't, like, watched past the first episode, but just by randomly, I found a few things out. Like, apparently, this is a series that, like, if they're not the main character, do not expect any character to stay around. Any character that, like, allies himself or even, like, looks at this dude for more than 10 minutes is probably just going to get chopped up in a blender in the worst possible way.
It's just very... It just feels so heavy-handed and, like... It's actually an excellent... I feel like it's actually an interesting contrast to be talking about this when I'm going to talk about Attack on Titan later, because it's, like... It's, like... If, I'm not saying, this is not my review of Attack on Titan yet, okay, but like, I'm not saying Attack on Titan does everything perfectly or anything, but I'm like, if this is like what you get, this Kingdoms of Ruin is like what you get when people don't understand like what was happening to Attack on Titan, and they're just like, oh, if we make everybody bad, then we just have our main character like just kill everybody, and that's gonna like feel really good and it'll be great.
I mean, I've discussed this before, but it also feels like the almost like the Madoka effect of like Madoka was famous for having like some like important deaths and like darkness, and then there was just that whole slew of dark magical girl shows that just like were like, all right, so we just make the world this crap sack sad world, and then we just like murder a magical girl every episode and just have everybody die and be sad, and like that's what people liked about Madoka, right?
Yeah, it's like, ooh, and the thing is, like, I thought at the beginning, I thought it was going to be interesting because it almost had a little bit of, like, a Claymore vibe to me, where we, like, the young boy is saved by this, like, very powerful, like, I mean, obviously in Claymore, she's not a witch, but like, you know, like I thought the dynamics were going to be sort of like that, and that interested me. And then it just like goes completely like, oh no, okay, we're like off, and like we're going to humiliate people, and we're going to like have all these horrible things, and it's just like they're so bad. Everyone's so bad that there's mustache twirling, you know, villains like that have absolutely no humanity at all.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just like I said, it just feels like, I don't know, it just the extreme of like all those like 90s and early 2000 anime reboots where they took like the general series and they just made everything super dark and edgy and like,
yeah, this is absolutely the edgelord show of the series, of the season. It doesn't have the most edgelord name because that goes to Protocol Rain, but if they switched titles, this one would just be all
look, Kingdom of Ruin is hardly like it, subtle.
It is. It's true. It's true. But it doesn't have like, you know, it doesn't have as like, I don't feel like it has like that angsty. It's not like an angsty title.
I feel like Kingdom of Ruins could be like some kind of like, you know, like super depressio, like metal or emo band.
Okay, I could see it. All right, I'm going to move in a very different fantasy direction. So I also watched My Daughter Left the Nest and Returned an S-Rank Adventurer. So this is not an isekai or anything.
I feel like this season is really weird. And like, in the fact that you watched The 100 Girlfriends and this one, and it's usually I'm the one who's like, I'm just going to try out that series. And you're the one who's like, nah, Kate, skip. So I just feel, I had to mention this right here before Kate gets into any other descriptions. It just feels like a little, what do you call it? Cats and dogs living together in harmony.
Well, I did say it's not an isekai show because if it had been, that would have been really weird. The kind of the premise of this story is that there is this like great adventurer and he ends up losing a leg in combat and retires. And once he's like started to settle down, he finds a baby in the woods and is like, I guess I'm going to like raise this child like that, you know, I'm retiring from adventuring and I'm going to like raise this child in this town.
Just one quick question, Kate. Do you know about the Skyrim meme? So like apparently there's like in Skyrim, there's like a very common line that one of like the guards can say random things, and one of them is like, I used to be an adventurer till I took an arrow to the knee. And it's like a line like people quote or like meme on. And that's the minute you said that, it's like, I used to be an adventurer till I lost everything below the knee.
And so he raises Angie, who then leaves home at 12 to become an adventurer herself. And she's like very successful. And it's been, I think in the first episode, I think maybe like 3 years, even 3 years more past. So I think she's like, you know, like 15 or 16 years old. And she's like very successful and has her own like adventuring party. And then like the joke is basically like she can never get a vacation because like her and her adventure party are like so good that it's like every time she tries to like take a vacation from the guild and like she gets like approval, like something happens in the world and like she can't like go and like see her dad, or like she's on the way to visit him and then like the person she's with like gets, you know, like they come across a carriage that's been like attacked by whatever and they have to like go help somebody, and by the time they do that like they have to get, you know, like, and so like she never seems to be able to like actually get home to like visit her dad, and they write letters to each other and stuff. The thing, and that's pretty much it. So it's like a little, like the first episode was like a bit slice of life-y, even though there's like, you know, funny little adventures or whatever. The opening is really exciting. So it's like a little disappointing. And then, and maybe there gets to be more story past episode one. I don't know. But the other thing that I was trying to figure out when I was watching this is like, I just couldn't tell like who it's for, like who is the target audience, because like her she's like always trying to go home to see her dad, and like that never happens. So like we're also sort of seeing like occasionally see her dad like in the town like doing stuff or whatever. And so I'm like, is this for like dads or like parents who are like, oh, you know, my kid is grown up and like I just couldn't figure it out. I was like, I don't know who this is like supposed to be appealing to. And she's like cool, and her adventure party's cool, but you know, it's not like, it's not super funny, and it's not like super action packed. And Angie herself isn't like, you know, like some fan service-y, like busty knight or something. So I was just like, like, it was fine, but I just, that's what I came away wondering about.
Like, who is this? Who's this
target? Like, who's the audience? Like, who's the target audience for this? Is it, like, a seinen series? I don't know. And, like, so it was not for me. It was not, like, anything offensive about it. But, yeah, that was, like, what my main takeaway was. And I would love to hear if anybody else watched it or, like, knows about it. I was just, like...
Was there at least even, like, a titty barbarian or, like, a titty, like, witch in the party?
Nope.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, like, so...
I feel like the minute we end this podcast, or the, like, if we take a halfway break, I'm going to look this up.
Yeah, because I'm like, oh, and I'm sure it's based on, like, a light novel or something. So it's like, oh. All right. So moving into different kind of fantasy, MMO fantasy, is Shangri-La Frontier.
So we begin Shangri-La Frontier, where we meet our main character, who's, like, the king of, like, garbage games. He, in this world... VR games have become like the standard way that people play games. And there's like, you know, obviously like VR has come in a long way. Everybody standardly plays VR games. But this one dude, his whole deal is instead of playing like the coolest and latest games, he goes out of his way to play the most janky, broken garbage games, and like kind of gets a thrill of like being able to beat these games even though they're so poorly designed and actively work against you. And then about after we see him like beat like his latest thing, he's like doesn't know what to do, and the game shop owner who he's friends with was like, why don't you take a break and like play like an actual good game? Everybody's like loving this Shangri-La Frontier. I think you might actually like, even if, what do you call it? Even if you don't like it, it'll like make you go back to when you play the next garbage game of just how garbage they are. And he's like, ah, that makes sense. And we basically end with him like, because he's just like so used to like breaking games and like having to get around the garbagey system, he's already like, he's like enjoying the game, but like definitely going out about it like the way that a normal player wouldn't, because he's like using his old Kuso game techniques on a not Kuso game.
And then there's also some sort of like love interest romance girl who clearly plays this game and like wants to talk to him, but like can't figure out how. And I think that's also part of the motivation of the game shop owner.
Yeah.
Like,
because she seems to be friends with the girl and was like hoping that like, oh, if these two both play the game together, like maybe she'll actually like build up the courage, or like maybe if she like meets him as like her avatar, she can like, you know, connect with him there in a way that she couldn't do in real life.
I guess similar to the show I just talked about, I guess I watched the first episode and I just didn't figure out like what's the story? Like, what's the crux of this? Besides just like him going through this super great MMO.
I think the idea is that, like, do you know what Nuzlocke is?
Nope.
Okay. So Nuzlocke is this like set of rules that people play Pokemon with. If you want to know more, you know both who we both know who you can ask about this. But
I don't need that 10-hour lecture.
But like, you play with a bunch of rules, like the most famous of which is if any of your Pokemon faint in the game, they're considered dead. And you throw them out and you can't play with them anymore. So you basically have to like play Pokemon. There are a bunch of other rules. I don't like, once again, you can ask our mutual friend, but you play the game on like a hard mode that isn't in the game. You basically play with these very strict rules to give you like this like super hard mode challenge. And I feel like in a way that's what my roommate really clicked with this one, because it's all about like the rules of a game and how do you like maximize your thing, which obviously, you know, my roommate, that's like a certain appeal to him. But I think that's the idea, like seeing this dude who has like a weird or like almost like a Nuzlocke way of viewing games and game worlds, challenging this game in a way that like only he would, because like he like built this really weird build that's like all about like no armor and like being able to like you know, like take on like harder bosses, like, you know, let's say like if you recommended to fight this boss at like level 15, he's doing at like level 5. It's almost like, or like there are people who will do like Dark Soul runs with like no armor. It's almost like an anime version of like watching somebody do like a mega hard run of a game. That's my theory, that's supposed to be the idea of this thing, of seeing somebody like self-impose a super hard run of a game. I like the look on your face is like, why would this interest me?
Because like, I mean, people like Let's Plays. Mm-hmm. So like, I guess that's what the appeal of it is. I do not like those. Mm-hmm. Have no interest in them. So like, because to me, that's not a story. Like, it's a story for yourself if you're playing it and you're going to play it on hard mode because you, like, whatever, right? Because you're actually playing it. But, like, to me, watching this, that's not a story. That's just, like, a mechanic.
But, I mean, it's clear that just by the existence of my roommate, there is an audience for that kind of... I mean, he watches Let's Plays all the time. So, like, I feel like that's the appeal. That's what the audience they're going for.
I guess, but also, even in a Let's Play, at least, because, like, I'll watch, like, a speed run, mm-hmm. right? But, like, there's still another human component to that. Like, there's not a, like, I guess he's playing the game mm-hmm. on the VR. So, like, that's supposed to be the idea of it. But, like, it's not real.
It feels to me like someone was, like, what I got away with was, like, let's make it animated Let's Play of this guy. That's what it, I could be wrong.
I think that makes sense because I just couldn't figure out what it was about.
That, in my opinion, I could be wrong, but that, I think that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be like...
Okay, that's not a plot, though. Like, that's just not... That's not a story.
But people are watched and entertained by that stuff, so I feel like...
I am not saying that is not true, but that's also not a story.
I mean, I'm pretty
sure... I mean, it seems like there's going to be something in here. Because
there's the girl, and like...
There's also, like, the worst... This is, like, definitely Wynn's worst opening song of the season, for sure. There's, like, scream rap happening, and then some bad singing later. So, yeah, I just couldn't figure out what the plot was.
So, what you're saying is... Nobody call it. Even if you want to watch this one, make sure that you watch it on Crunchyroll with the skip opening button available.
You don't have it. It depends on what in what system you're watching.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like if you're going to watch this series, make sure you watch it on a computer where the let's skip opening is.
I definitely recommend that. All right, moving on to concepts. Super, super special concepts. Under Ninja, which is like a farcical contemporary ninja story.
Don't you mean a true history of mankind?
I believe the first episode is called Throw a Rock, Hit a Ninja.
What do you call it? It's a documentary filmed in real time, like Highlander.
It is about a world where... There are a lot of ninja. Kuro, who is a guy who seemingly like just loafs around all the time until he is assigned. And he's a ninja. And he finally gets assigned to a school. And then there's like a rival school. And then there's some like ninja otaku that are also part of his group. And they're also kind of... This show is really hard to describe. It's like, the characters are so dumb.
It's also told non-linearly because it like begins and ends with like the two like ninja teams like squaring off. But in between that is just like establishing him several months before. He's like, 21 Jump Streeting this school because he's like a dude in his 20s who's like pretending to be a high school student so he can fight ninjas at the rival school.
And but also there's just like this vibe about the show that's it like reminds me of something else, but it doesn't look like typical anime. I guess it's like, you know, it doesn't look like what you imagine as like anime character designs, and like everybody looks very normal looking, I guess.
I want to say the first thing that comes to my mind, but it's clearly not, is like Ninja Slayer, kind of like the absurdity level, but like Ninja Slayer is like to like a crazy extreme level, whereas this is like weirdly trying to play it straight while being that like,
but almost like a mundanity, but not. it's an experience. Cause yeah, it doesn't have like the flashiness of like when you think of like ninja anime, right? Oh, guys, ninjas throughout history have been, you know, like
the greatest weapon of mankind. Yeah. MacArthur had a band, ninjas in Japan.
But like, just like the character designs and stuff have such a mundanity to it, and like the uniforms, and just, like it just doesn't. I think that's purposeful. It's like, it's called, I mean, Under Ninja, I guess. It's like supposed to be like low key ninjas, We don't really see any actual ninja fighting in the first episode. Like,
there's so just like ninjas
posturing
on two like rooftops, basically looking at each other, going.
Right.
It was something I watched.
Definitely unique. How's that? Okay, so we're back into the contemporary. So we'll go from ninjas at school to our dating story, the experienced you and the inexperienced me. So this is a rom-com series, and our sort of very nerdy average guy is kind of coerced by his friends into asking out this girl.
Because they basically make a bet, and like whoever loses the bet has to like do.
Like, or who wins the bet? I forget.
No. Well, they lose, but basically like whoever got the highest score loses. And he got the highest score, he lost. So his friends are like, well, you got to ask out the hot gal, and like, and then you'll get shot down, and we'll, you know.
And so he ends up confessing to this very popular girl in school, and she agrees to start dating him. And he's like, that wasn't supposed to happen. And so she like agrees to like, well, like I'll get to know you then. Like if you like me, like, okay. And so I think the first episode is really like first sort of his shock at like this happening, and then them like starting to get to know each other, and her expecting to have sex with him that day, like they've just met, or they've really just, you know, started dating. And so like in her mind, she's like, oh well, like I just assumed that that's what you wanted, and like that was going to happen. And then he's like, wait, like, yes, but no. And like, I don't want to yet. And like, I want to get to know you. And so I felt like the show is like, you know, you're like, are you like trying to shame this girl? But then he's not like uninterested. You know, it's not like, oh, well, I'm not interested in you because you're
I found that you've had sex. Thereby, what do you call it? Like, not a virgin, not interested.
Right. Like you're not pure anymore. So, but he's like, oh, but I would rather like get to know you. And don't you want to get to know me first? So I think he's attempting to have like a more than just physical relationship with her. And so his attempt at that is to not have sex right away. And so like, she's like, okay, interesting. So I'm like mildly worried about like what the show is trying to say, but also like, he's not interested in her. So like, I think that's a positive sign.
Well, like, I think the question is how much of this is going to, and you've already hinted it, is going to just play, it's just a different avenue of playing into Japanese purity culture as opposed to or how much of this is like, Japanese purity culture is bumpus. Who cares about it?
Yeah, and it's like, because, you know, like, waiting until you're ready to have sex is, like, a very important and empowering thing. But also, to imply that, like, you can't have sex and also have a deep relationship with someone is also, like, bad. And, like, so it's, like, is this a sex-positive show? Or is it, like, oh, but wouldn't you be so much happier if you hadn't had sex with all those guys and you had just waited and, like, just, like, gotten to know me and then had sex with me, which is like not, I don't know. It's, yeah, it's like, and this is obviously also very much aimed at guys. So it's like, what's the, you know, like, I don't think it's actually trying to like say anything to women. So like, what is it saying? I don't know.
It's like, oh, Are there women who read this? I guess. You're welcome here too, I suppose. Yeah, I think it's like one of those things where like nothing in the first episode super tipped their hand of which way it was going. But like it was easy to see how either interpretation could easily be like gleaned from that first episode. It was like, oh no, this is just like, is it purity culture awesome? Or like, is it purity culture bullshit? And like, you like, either one of these could easily be the way that this shit goes. Or it could be like one of those shows where like it tries to say both at the same time and doesn't realize that, what do you call it, those are contradictory messages.
Yeah, so I didn't find the relationship like that appealing to me, so it's not something I will explore to find out, but I am curious, like, if, you know, which way it sort of falls, because I think it's, you know, important for it to not, and like, oh my god, I hope it doesn't have like some sort of like, oh well, like now she's like re-virgined or whatever because like she's like weird 90s like things. Like I said, at the very least, he's not deterred by her experience, which I sadly is a step in, like a huge step.
It's like, like, what do you call
giant
it?
Giant step.
It's like with me and the good cleric, they didn't endure slavery. What a step up.
Woohoo! Good job. I feel like we're in the string of like mid. Okay, so next up is Kawagoe Boys Sing, Now or Never. So this is a music series about a high school boys choir, and it's an original, I think. And it's like the thrust of the story is that there's this like disgraced conductor who is tasked with creating a boys choir and win nationals to like redeem himself. I'm trying to think if it's his grandmother who owns the school. I forget what the relationship was, but it was basically like, look, you do this for me and like, I'll, you know, like help you.
I'll make the rounds and like reintroduce you back into like the business. And so people will like, you know, unblacklist you essentially.
Yeah, but like the conductor guy, his vibe is really weird and like very off-putting.
So I didn't watch the show, but like, is it a spoiler to mention what he did that got him so, or do you not find that on the first episode?
They did mention it. I don't remember now what it was. I just want to say that
did
it was
he punch
like
a critic?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I was like, did he? Maybe that was it. But that's in Barakamon. So now you're confusing me. I don't remember what it was. But yeah, I don't know. His vibe is just very weird, and he's like going around like really like trying to figure out different kids that like at the school that would be good for this, but like the way that he approaches them is all like really weird and off-putting, and like, you know, like I think the show thinks it's funny or something, but I don't feel like the humor has the right feel to it, and the pace of the show is off. There's just something about it's just like all over the place. We have one kid who we start the story with, and like he sings at home, but he doesn't want to sing in front of people, and so like of course, you know, the conductor really wants this kid in the choir, and like he pulls in like some sports guys, and like he's like, you know, trying to form this group, but like the way he goes about it is just not really very fun, and like the dynamic is just weird between everybody. I don't know. It the premise of the show sounds like exactly something that I would love. And then the execution of the show was just like, ugh. And then also, the music was pretty eh. And you're like, wait, but this is like about choir and you're going to make the music like, I guess.
It's like a Shonen fighting series where you're like, the fights were like only like mid-animated and not that interesting.
Yeah. Found this one very disappointing because it seemed like it was going to hit all of these things. And then I think the first episode is just a real letdown.
So our next series is Shy, which is about a superhero universe, which has, you know, definitely, thanks to My Hero Academia, become a little more popular. And in this world, every nation seems to have a superhero, like a national superhero. And the superhero from Japan is this girl named Shy, who...
she's pretty new.
Yeah, she's new. And she's just... like severely has like some real confidence and like social anxiety, like confidence issues and social anxiety. And in the first episode, she, you know, we see her try to save some people and she does, but she's not fully successful. And one of the people she tries to save gets injured and there's a huge like online backlash and she kind of drops out of hearing. And the first episode is basically like with a combination of like other heroes and her own like journey of, you know, figuring out her powers and her just general self getting back into the superhero game.
Then Space Justice League. The real story doesn't really get... you know, it doesn't really reveal itself to the very end. And then you don't know then past that point. Like, so, because once she goes, like, once she kind of gets her groove back, mm-hmm. is willing to, like, try again, she is summoned to Space Justice League. And then they're like, hey, we have some plans. And, like, there's a whole bunch of us. And, like, there's bigger things going on, you know, so.
And then it's even a bigger... bum, bum, bum at the end of the episode, which I won't.
So
it felt very prologue.
Yes. That's a good way of putting it. And I do think it is, I think it's a light novel. So that's probably like that's the prologue or the first chapter or something. But Shy herself, like, the thing I couldn't totally tell in the first episode was like, what the superhero power, like, it almost felt like superheroes, they have some specific powers, but they all share other, like, it just seemed like everybody was strong and everybody was like.
Well, the problem was, from what I gathered, was that there seems to be a two-fold mechanic. Like, everybody has powers, but also everybody has... super, like, there seems to be like some, whether this is just part of the world or like someone's specific power, but like Shy had her own powers, but she also had gimmicks from her suit that were not, as far as I can tell, related to her power. Because her like hovering and kind of like basically like super jump, because it wasn't really like flying, it was more like a super jump with some hovering, is all from, as far as I can tell, her suit, her strength, and like what I think one of her other things seemed to be her actual powers. And like one of the two other heroes, like the Russian lady, I think it was the same thing, where like some of it was her ability to like turn her body to mist, but some of her other stuff seemed to be like gadgets and part of her suit. So it seems like people have both powers and gimmick suits. And, like, maybe that's explained in, like, later episodes. But, I think that's where some of your confusion is coming from. That, like, it seems like, because usually, and there are some exceptions, it seems like most of the time it's usually like hero who has gimmicks, like a gimmick suit. But it was a little more like Tiger and Bunny, where like Tiger has a power, but he also has the suit which has its own powers. Like, everybody seemed like that. Or at least that's the impression that I got.
That makes more sense for me. Because I felt like I wasn't... It just, like, wasn't even clear to me, like, what her powers were.
But I think that's one of the problems that, like... But, yeah, it wasn't, like, clear. We never got, like, the, you know, the stat sheet or the, like, exposition character who was, like... And here's Shaw, who's, you know, like... You know, like a TV announcer who was like, you know, introducing Shy at the stage show. Shy's power. Like, that would have been like the perfect time when she was doing that like stage show to have like the announcer come out and like introduce Shy, the Japanese hero, and her powers are blah, 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 and her suit does X, Y, and Z. I mean, I guess it's better than just having like a blatant exposition dump. From, you know, basal exposition, but at the same time, yeah, you were like, what, wait, what, how much is that a suit, how much is the girl?
I don't know, I almost feel like this is a theme of the season, but I do feel like a lot of these first episodes, maybe it's either because of what they're based on or whatever, but like, and I think this has come up in other seasons too, but I feel like I wasn't 100% sure like what... always what the story was in every show, you know, it was like, oh, okay.
Well, from what I heard, what I remember of the Anti-Gamers, I don't even think in the first chapter of the original Shy story, that whole Justice League thing, I think it's just the story and then the twist at the end. I think the Justice League thing happens later.
Well, I'm glad they added that in, because at least then you have a sense of, like, the greater world sort of stuff.
And maybe, like, a story that will eventually come up. Yeah, I think they deliberately move things around, so that was at least in the first episode, if I remember what they said correctly. I think they were also a little, like, I think Evan had, like, been months since he had read the original. Or, no, did you just read it? I remember. He was, like... a little unclear of like, or I think he read the whole novel or like first volume of the manga like the night before or the day that he watched the episode. So I think it might have also just been like the chapters running together.
I liked I overall liked the vibe of this and like could see myself like watching some more of it just to get like a more, because I feel like we only get introduced to really one other hero and then like maybe like a little bit of one other after that. So like, you know, you don't really like know all the I feel like the appeal of something like this is the dynamics between characters and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good episode. I think the animation was good. I think like it was like serviceable, was good. It was very prologue-y. I don't think everything needs to be four episodes of Freyan at the same time so you can get to, you know, like, the actual plot. But, yeah, it is... Sometimes when you get that one episode that's just prologue, it's a little hard to tell. Is the prologue an indicator of... what you're going to get for the rest of the series, or is it just the jumping off board and what like a standard episode will be is, you know, something you only find out by like episode 3 or 4 or something like that.
And I have to say with so many shows, like, dear Lord, there are so many shows in the fall season. That's a lot of episodes to imagine,
Sampling to see
sampling, which, yeah.
You just gotta be friend and just have an elf who researches magical systems and hook me every time.
You know I fell asleep during that part. Okay, so Freyan, so the like ratings have mm-hmm. come out in Japan, and Freyan is like the top anime of the season in terms of ratings, or like that's not like Sazae-san, you know what I mean? Nothing like something like that. But do you know what else is way up there?
Just one thing, Kate.
Like beating Doraemon.
If it is Rise of the Shield Hero, please.
I would not even bother bringing this up if it was something that horrible.
Okay. As long as that is not the answer, I will accept anything that you tell me, Kate.
So first, Freyan is one of, it's beating like Doraemon and stuff like that. Firefighter Daigo.
Interesting. I like, all right, that's interesting. I find that, like, that's almost kind of cool. I'm like, cool.
It's like up there with, like, One Piece and Precure are, like, Freyan and Firefighter Daigo.
Interesting. Like, as long as it doesn't fucking Rise of the Shield Heroes of Season 3, I'm like, I would literally, if it were, like, 100 girlfriends, I'd be like, all right, fine, whatever. Not my cup of tea, but cool. If it was, like...
I don't think you could really get up there if, like, children and their parents aren't watching it at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think...
Oh, yeah, no. I just, like, I was willing to accept any, literally any other answer other than
what if it was Kingdoms of Ruin?
Let's be realistic, Kate. Like, I would have just been like, man, I guess, we need to call
it. I wish I could say it was Hypnosis Mike. That's what I want to be able to say for the season.
Like, I was actually kind of expecting, like, in the back of my head, was like maybe M.M. Motherfucker Ghost.
No. Anyway, I've gotten far off, but I have been enjoying Firefighter Daigo. Last but not least, new show of the season that we wanted to mention was Overtake. And this is an original, very heavily sponsored, if you watch any of it.
Wait, what are you talking about, Kate? I'm just going to go out and buy some Goodyear tires.
So this is, shockingly, the other racing show of the season. It is Formula 4 or F4 racing, so it's very different from MF Ghost. A lot of car company names in here, like brands, and you know, it's definitely sponsored. And it
the clever thing is it's almost organic because so many of those like Formula One cars do have like branding all over them. So it's like, oh, we just dropped all those brands down there because that's the way it is in the real world.
And actually, you start off thinking it's to be about Formula One, but it's actually about F4, which I didn't know. As I said that, didn't I sound like I knew what the hell I was talking about? Obviously, I only learned all of that from the first episode. And it has sort of a two-pronged story. So we start off and we're following this photographer who's like friend / maybe ex.
No, God, she's definitely the ex because she mentions that like her boss is like, why do you keep hanging around with this guy after he dumped you? Like,
okay. Already love that dynamic. So she has sort of coerced him into going to this racing event and being the photographer there, because you know her mission is really to like try to help him, because we know that something traumatic happened in his past. We see a couple like flashes of it. And he is this great photographer, but he cannot bring himself to photograph people anymore. So she brings, you know, is like, well, I want you to come to this racing event and like take pictures of the cars and stuff like that. And while he's there, he stumbles upon the F4 racing teams and then like starts learning about it. And
well, like he's like introduced to, like, interviewed this one team, but as the, like, one of the members is taking him around, he, like, kind of finds, because they're, like, from a, like, a big, you know, big sponsor team with, you know, a bunch of racers, and they kind of, the guy that they send with, it's already kind of a little surly, and then they kind of, he has bad blood with this other team, and, like, a little fight breaks out, and he, like, smooths it over, but then kind of starts talking to this other team that, that, you know, the first team had, like, some beef with.
And so our photographer is really, like, the audience point of view character who's, like, learning about, like, what is F4? How does sponsorship work? Oh, actually, a lot of, like, the smaller teams here have to fund it all themselves. And, like, how does the money work? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then on the other side of it is this small underdog team. Hilariously, the driver's name is Haruka, and I swear to God, he basically says I only drive free in this in this show. But you know what? You can't drive alone because you need a whole team for F4. And he also has like piercing blue eyes. I don't know. What is this a coincidence? I think not. There's a, we also get to see a race in the first episode, and Haruka is, like I said, a kind of an underdog, and he makes some great strides, and then it's, like, has a really good emotional arc by the end of just episode one, and our photographer also finally snaps a photo that he, you know, feels like maybe he can move on, and like racing is maybe like,
or like it almost seemed like the scene that he captured was so powerful that even his trauma could not like stop him from taking that picture.
And so I really liked the emotions in this first episode, and like really had very low expectations for this show, gotta be honest. And I thought like all the dynamics of the characters were really interesting. This photographer, I found, you know, his story really interesting and like emotional. I felt very emotional at both like the race, what happened in the race, and like the photographer's story. So like I'm really interested in like seeing where this goes. I don't know if it's gonna become just like rah-rah racing after the first episode, but I feel like they really told an emotional story in the first episode at the very least.
And there's definitely a like linking of those two storylines, especially at the end of the episode. More than just the I'm a photographer who is gonna do some pictures at F1 and I'm a race guy.
Right, but I don't know if, like, I just hope the series isn't like, okay, the drama's over and now we just love racing, you know? Like,
kind of like what I said about earlier about, like, you know, Slam Dunk, where it's like, it was romance and, you know, sports at one point, and then they're like, what the fuck is romance? Sports.
Yeah, so I was like, I hope they still lean into, like, because I think that they really successfully did that, and so I would hate for it to lose that. I don't know, like, what the ratio of the story is going to be, like, past this point, but I really liked the characters. And who knew I would like anything about F4? I didn't even know what that was.
See, so if it was F1, you wouldn't care.
That's F4. Right. That's right, because I definitely know the difference. All right, so that wraps up new shows of the fall 23 anime season so much. I'm going to try to watch a lot. We'll see how that turns out.
Well, you can keep up with it, but you got dropped.
Like, you'll find out. You'll find out by, January when I, or like February when we review, like, hey, here's everything we finished. And it's like three shows. And I'm like, I did my best, you guys. But speaking of shows that we did finish from the summer season, you thought I was going to end the podcast and forget about this.
Fool me once.
I think my certainly favorite show from the previous season was Undead Murder Farce, because it was truly a delight in every episode. And I think that even though it doesn't wrap up its entire story, because it's like an ongoing series
of novels, yeah.
I still think it, it wraps up the big story at the end and like gives us hints about where things were going to go next and everything. So I still felt like pretty good about the end of the series.
So yeah, just as a quick recap, we have a alternate history where like monsters and ghouls and just the supernatural is in the shadows, but not really hidden. It's just like something that like the average person knows exists, but doesn't run into much. And so in Japan, there was a big extermination event and a lot of like supernatural creatures were killed. And our main character is a half oni who kind of is living on the fringes and feels like it knows that he's going to go mad one day from the Oni blood in him. But this immortal says, hey, if you help me find my body, I will let you drink my blood and like starve off the madness that your Oni blood would normally like destroy your mind. And they team up.
And I like how you like, You said that they needed to find her body, so like it was implied, but like just as a reminder, the other main character of this show is just ahead.
In a cage.
So she's the immortal. And she has her attendant.
And so they're solving mysteries in Europe while looking for the mysterious man with the M cane who stole
a mysterious doctor.
Who stole her body.
And over the course of this season, they meet many a literary character, including Lupin, not Lupin the Third, and Sherlock Holmes. And there's other various...
And technically one historical character, although at this point, they're like... Because Aleister Crowley is like, weirdly at this point, half fictional character, half... Like, there's actual historical Aleister Crowley, and then there's, like, the legend of Aleister Crowley that is around him.
I think this one is possibly leaning more into the legend.
All right, you wanted to say that, Kate. Although, technically, I think he's the only one who doesn't have a power. He just has, like the power of, like, persuasion and, like, gimmicks I won't go into, but he's more of a gimmick fighter guy than an actual, he just pretends to have powers through gimmicks.
And they also meet various supernatural beings like vampires and werewolves. And then they usually solve a crime either involving one of those things or involving one of these literary characters. The Phantom of the Opera is in here.
The character from Around the World in 80s Days.
So it's just like a real, it's just a real romp. It's just, it's very, it has great dialogue. The mysteries, I think, are overall a lot of fun.
And I think they're decently constructed. I feel like you know, I feel like they generally follow Knox's. It's some what I liked about the Almola case files, that even though there's magic and supernatural stuff going on, they construct the mysteries so that they're generally solvable without, like, just being, and then magic did it, and then and there was no way to know it because magic.
I did think that the final mystery was a little convoluted. Ultimately, but it's still like, all right, like, sure. Like, I think I liked the other mysteries probably better than the last one in here.
Well, I think if they definitely wanted to do the, like, and you think this is the answer, and then there's actually another secret reveal, and then there's another secret reveal, and then even after all of that, there's the true secret reveal.
It just felt, I didn't totally dislike it. I was just sort of like, oh, I think I liked the other ones, like, a little bit more.
Well, I think it, like, I think that's the problem with any of the, I'll just call them, like, Inception reveals, where, like, your mileage may vary on, like, where you think, what, which level of Inception reveal do you think is the too much?
But I think for me, like, just the more important part was just these characters. Like, it was like, I just want to see these characters solve mysteries. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just so delightful. Once they learn a little bit more about, like, M and, like,
that. Their bigger plans for Europe and the world.
Oh. Although, I would say, I like that this series, like, calls itself a farce, so it, like, specifically, like, really leans into it. But I would say the weirdest thing is, like, that other group that eventually...
Oh, yeah, the weird insurance,
like,
people?
Yeah, like, that part is just almost, it's, like, almost too much.
The thing is, the insurance people just seem to be there so they can murder, like, have someone die. Because you can't have the main trio die. And they don't want to see M and his organization. Like, they seem to really like to have those members around to be, like, the big baddies of the series. So it feels like, well, we gotta have somebody die every episode. And these guys are all ass, like, and we have literally...
And everybody hates them, so...
So, like, if we lose, like, two of them every episode...
They just feel a little out of, like, I don't know how you can be out of left field in this series where I just said all the things that I said about it, but they are a little bit.
But it just, like, by the third time, I'm like, all right, these fuckers are just here to be annoying and then get murdered.
Despite that, I just think so fun. I felt, like, very fresh. Like, oh, you haven't seen this before, I guess. That's how it felt. And, like, it had a maturity, but it also had just, like, a silliness to it. Loved it. Would recommend.
No, it was very enjoyable. Since there are more books, if they had a second season, I think we'd both easily watch it.
So. I would be so happy. I think it is very frustrating that this is, like, a mystery. And so, like, we don't get the answer, but at the same time, we basically know the answer. They just haven't achieved getting to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like at least, well, like...
We know who the criminal is, but we don't know where the body is. That's the...
Right. Right. But, it just feels like, oh, at least we know a lot of the answers, so it's not like us. Oh, I'm so frustrated because the big mystery of the series is still so open. It's like, well, we haven't gotten to it, but, like, we assume we know, like, at least some amount.
Mm-hmm.
Another great show of the season that we wrapped up was Gene of AI, which, by the way, every time I watched the opening for that show, well, first I'd close my eyes and scream because of the creepy baby. But the font is like the same font that they used to use for Anime Next. So like every time I see like the logo, I'm like, hey, it's Anime Next. But so this is a series that is about a like a near future where there are humans, there are humanoids, and there are androids, and they, you know, like all three live like and function like within society.
And humanoids are essentially like almost like a little mixture of like designer baby and like robot, whereas like androids are just, I am full robot. There was no like human part of me. And they're also robots, and I assume cyborgs, just because if you have the technology to make androids and humanoids, then...
I wonder if humanoids would just be considered cyborgs?
Well, because the humanoids, like, can have, like, programmable brains and stuff like that.
That's true, yeah.
So they're a little more than cyborgs, but I don't think we ever saw any, but like I just have to assume that there's just cyborgs out there just because it just didn't come up in a story.
And we're following a doctor who works on both like mostly works with humanoids, and it's basically like vignettes of like different patients with different scenarios. Like sometimes they're coming there because they like want to erase their memories of something, or sometimes the parent of somebody is bringing their child there because that child is like having behavioral issues, and it's basically like different patients are used to explore like different aspects of society or like
technology and or more usually the intersection of both of those.
And I feel like the series was really good about asking really interesting questions about like how you use this technology and like just like morality or like mental health, romance. Like it just really, I thought just like brought up so many really, but the worst part / best part of the series is that it doesn't necessarily try to answer like the questions that it brings up. You just are like left at the end thinking a lot and having really interesting conversations, I feel like, about topics that it brings up.
So I don't know, did you do any research about the manga that this is based on?
I don't know what you're gonna say, so I don't think so.
The one thing I will say about this is that this is the ending of this series is the ending of the manga Gene of AI. So literally, you get the whole series. The thing is, there are three later series. There's like Gene of AI, like there's like one that's like Red Something, Blue Something, which is all about, I don't want to spoil what happens, the next part of the story that would logically come. And then after that story abroad is done in those two books, there's a sequel series to all of that that's back in Japan. And that one's ongoing. So I think it's worth noting that technically this is the whole series that is Gene of AI, but you might be like, that's where it ends? Because, like, there's still, like, the major overarching story plot has not...
Right, I was going to mention that. So our doctor, when he was young, he was very ill. And so his mother was trying to get him treatment, and she basically gets conned into letting them copy her...
memories, which is illegal, like a brain scan essentially.
Yeah, and so she's actually in jail, and the copy of her is somewhere in the world. And so the doctor is like been trying to like locate and get information about trying to find this other person. And so like that part of the story is not wrapped up, but he does get some information at the end of the
like
series.
A clue of where to start looking. Cause the copy mom like went like super underground.
And then there's also this part of the story that's like about the super AI that like helps run society. That's also like
very clearly like targeting him and being like, I'll help you find your mom, but then you've got to do stuff for this guy.
Yeah. So like So there's like greater world mysteries that we definitely are almost completely ignored for the entire show, except for like the first episode and then like the last episode. And maybe there's like one or two like little things in the middle of the series.
So I do know that some of that, or at least I assume some of that is solved in the later three series. But it's worth noting that there is more of this. So theoretically you could, either by hunting those series down or by waiting for, theoretically could get like adaptations of those. But this is technically where the original series, Gene of AI, ends.
Yeah, like I said, I feel like I would love to know the answers to that, but I did feel like the focus of this was more about like asking these interesting questions about
technology. I just thought about it to mention to anybody who like maybe didn't do the research or thing, that there are answers, but they're not in this series. This series is technically the end of this first part.
But what did you think of this part?
I thought it was entertaining. I thought, like you said, it brought up some interesting like technological and societal questions. I think I would have been a little annoyed if I didn't know that, like, because I feel like it was like, all right, so like, why is Super AI interested in this guy? And like, what happened to his mom? Because there's clearly more story to that. And like, but like, all right, I know that there's like, you know, because at first I thought, like, did it get canceled? And that's why it ends the way it does.
I have to say, I feel very uninvested in the romance in this.
Oh, yeah.
Series,
like,
I was sort of like, I'm cool with him going and doing what he needs to do here. She's not the point of view character, but like occasionally she's the point of view character, and then I feel like later in the series she was like frequently a point of view character, and I was like, is this story about her? Because like, I'm not really interested in that story.
Sorry, pigtail nurse.
Like, I don't hate you or anything, but you're not that interesting. Yeah, I think it was much more successful when it was asking those interesting questions. And I know it made me think a lot about just like all kinds of stuff. And I was like, whoa, expecting to.
Well, as far as I can tell, once again, from the little I saw, she doesn't seem to be that prominent in the next two, the red and blue stories. I assume she comes back when the third series gets back to Japan.
I kind of doubt that we're going to get any more anime of this, so I'd love to read the manga, and maybe that's more of an avenue that maybe it'll get licensed in English. And you can really, I remember when we first talked about it, you can really see like the Urasawa influence on this. So like it's interesting that this came out and then like Pluto just came out, so...
All right, Kate, now time for the happy fun. So I have a question before you begin this.
That's right, everyone. This is the part of the podcast where I talk about the end of Attack on Titan.
So is this the end?
It's the end.
Okay.
It's the real end.
Because there have been so many.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm refusing to talk about it if it wasn't the end.
So this is the real action.
Okay. There is no more.
Okay, I was wondering if, like...
Finale!
You were talking about... Because I knew there was, like, the finale this season. I was like, is Kate talking about when she stayed up to this part and then she's going to talk about the actual final, or is that all finally out?
It's all out.
Cool.
Over the weekend, they dropped the last... Basically, there were two specials. Mm-hmm. The first one was about an hour, and then the last episode special was like an hour and a half. And that was like the true, we're end. It's the end. There is no more.
I think they did mention that they were, when that last thing dropped, that they were doing in like a 3-episode like epilogue, like extra thing recently.
So, like,
but yes,
it's the end. There is, wait, you're saying they're doing more? They are not.
They're doing a 3-episode, like, I don't know what it is. It doesn't matter.
That seems impossible based on what happened. Like, the end of this is, like, hundreds of years in the future.
I think it's supposed to be something about Mikasa and Hermione, but don't quote me on that.
Oh my god, we don't need any more. We don't need, they said everything that they needed to say.
It feels more like one of those, like, just like, to like, maybe like, promote the like, final two specials, but.
But they already, the final came out.
But I think it was supposed to be like, and now you can, now that you've watched the final, go out and read these last 3 bonus chapters.
God damn it. I won't do it.
That's fine.
Anyway, what was your question?
Oh, I just wanted to know, is this the actual friggin' final?
Yes, because we're not acknowledging anything that you just said.
I mean, once again, I consider those like bonus epilogue chapters. This is the actual end.
Yes. So I am not going to talk spoilers because otherwise I think I could like literally do an entire hour and a half podcast about this one subject alone. So,
but randomly, just especially considering like the emotions you're going to go through. Imagine those last 3 epilogue chapters and nothing but chicken chase.
No. I can't. It's literally impossible.
That would be hysterical and evil.
It really would be. So like I said, I'm going to talk in broad strokes. No specific spoilers here, I don't think, just because it's honestly like so convoluted at certain points that like if you haven't seen everything, you wouldn't even understand what I was saying.
Especially the part where they all have to now do the battle athlete competitions against the aliens.
I mean, like, the thing about Titan, it's such an interesting series. I really don't feel like there ultimately is another anime equivalent of it. And, like, it's definitely a different show from like what you might think it will be from season 1. And I think ultimately for the end of the series, I think that the ending makes sense, that it is the ending that it should be,
the natural conclusion to the story. It didn't feel like,
but that doesn't mean that I liked it. The end. It's very bleak. It is very, very sad. It is very, very bleak. There is no hope basically in the ending of this story. Like, they almost say that there is, and then they like proceed to show you that that was foolish, that for you to think that even for a moment.
Sucker, you believed in something for a minute.
Yeah, I feel like if you were to argue to me that like, oh, that was obvious from the first season, I would disagree with that. I think that up until the time skip, I think that there was a timeline in which you could have had a hopeful end to the story, But like once the time skip, so basically once the final season started, and that's where the time skip starts, I think it was pretty clear from like the first few episodes of that was no longer an option. Like it was like, oh, okay, I don't see that as being it possible anymore, because the final season, which I think I've talked about before, is like so brutal. There's like so much atrocity and like it's like devastating. Every single episode is emotionally draining and devastating, and like to the point where it's like, oh, I can only like watch one of these at a time because like so many bad things are happening. So like when you're coming from that, like the ending is like, okay, well, I mean that's what you were doing.
Didn't feel like it swerved at the last minute to like make a depressing ending.
No, definitely not. And then I was kind of having such like almost like a just like I was just like wondering for myself, because I don't like, that's the type of ending that I don't like. I don't like a hopeless bleak ending, mostly because I like to think of fiction as like a place where we explore, like, or at least in this case, like a place where we explore society and realities of the world, and that like you can then lead the way and like where, how can we like be better or something. As like that's what I sort of want as a takeaway in this type of story. And so it does not give you that. So I just personally find that, so like I just like don't really want that hopelessness, because like I can look out into the world and see that kind of hopelessness, and so like I want it to show me something possible, basically. Interestingly, the author, there was like a great interview with the author about sort of the ending of this story, and the author mentioned like that he really didn't feel like he could have written that type of ending because of the way he feels like the world is right now. Like he's like, oh, I just don't see that. So I like thought that was interesting, but I sort of was questioning like, okay, if I knew that for like just my description of the final season, which is not short, by the way, it's like, I don't know, like, I want to say it's like at least 12 episodes plus these two specials. Like, why did I continue to watch it? So I do think that like, ultimately, I think Titan was really compelling. I do think that like, I was compelled by every season. I think that like, the politics, everything that happened, the characters, I thought were compelling all the way through. And boy, the final season is really hard, and it's hard to say like, oh yeah, you should watch it.
Kate, the final season or the final season or the final.
The final really season final. Plus the specials. Yes. Everything past the time skip.
Okay.
When I say the final season, I just mean everything past the time skip. Like, it's hard to like, sometimes I don't even know why I was like still watching it, because it was, I don't think it was badly written, and like maybe some of its ideas were not as like well executed as they could be, but I do think that it, more than any other anime I've ever seen, really tries to explore like the true atrocities that human beings can perpetrate upon one another. Like, even more than, like, I was, the comparison I was making to offline was, like, oh, is it, like, a Gundam, you know, like, where it's trying to, like, explore, like, themes of war and, like, things like that. And it's, like, just so much more, it's so much more brutal in its execution of, like, explorations of, like, how people could be monsters. So it is really good. And I do think that, like, it all made sense, but it's really tough.
So, unfortunately, I think we brought this up a little. Like, we stopped watching this together because of just weird scheduling conflicts. And then I was going to watch it with my roommate, but then he basically sold down the VTuber hole. And so, like, he kept putting off, just like, oh, we're going to just marathon, and we're going to marathon. And it just got further and further away. So I'll probably eventually just finish it eventually on my own. So that's why I can't really weigh in here, because I basically stalled out, like, the second part of the final season. But I know the ending was very divisive among the fandom. But one other thing that was divisive that I'm very curious about your opinion, and you can just, you know, obviously I don't want to go into too many spoilers, but I do feel like there was this big divide on how pro-fascist the whole series is. And, like, the problem is there's, like, series like the book Starship Troopers, which is infamous for, like, Heinlein, like, very deliberately being like, you know what's cool? A fascist government. And let me write a sci-fi novel that, like, you know, like, basically goes, hey, kids, you know what's cool? Fascism. And that's why, like, the Paul Verhoeven movie is, like, so subversive, because it basically, like, mocks that whole point of it. Whereas I feel like there's the counterexample of Legend of Galactic Heroes, where people are like, man, that series is so pro-fascist. I'm like, did we watch the same series? Because I think you missed the point of the whole Legend of Galactic Heroes, my friend. So, like, I've seen, like, people mistake one for the other very easily. So since I trust your media literacy, what is your opinion on that?
It's anti-fascist.
Yeah,
Titan is. I mean, I think both because it's so hard to describe. Anyway, a certain ruling body in here is fascist, and that's bad. And then actually fascism becomes a part of, like, another faction of this story. And that is not good. They are not considered the heroes, unless apparently this, like, all there were, like, parts of online community who, like, got really upset at the ending, because it was basically like, no, that's bad, and, like, we're getting, like, so, like, because they thought, like, Aaron was, like, a right-wing hero or whatever. So, like, I think that the story puts the kibosh on that. And, like, one of the very hopeless portions of the end of the series is, like, a re-rising of fascism in a specific situation. So, like, yeah, that's part of the hopelessness of it. So it's definitely, I would say, not pro. Okay.
I've seen enough people say it that I was worried about it, but I've also just seen enough people misinterpret media to be...
Well, and also the thing is, like, I do feel, like, there are things about this story that could be executed better, and I do think that it is a story that's, like, well, if you stopped reading it at a certain point, yeah, you might think that, but, like, ultimately, you have to, you know, like, see where the story goes in order for it to tell you what it's actually about. And I think, like, even just Aaron as your main character is, like, a really complicated character, because, like, it seems like you know, it's one of those stories where you have to be careful about conflating depiction with endorsement, because like, just because Aaron's the main character doesn't mean that he's right. Especially again, like all everything is time skip is like, a lot of it's from Aaron's point of view, but like ultimately the show is not saying that Aaron is right about what he's doing or thinking or deciding. So like, in the end, it's like, oh no, that's no, we're saying that that is not good. So like, again, it's not, it's just like, it's much clearer once you get to the end of the story, but like, it's, I feel like it's easy if you were to stop in the middle to think it was saying something that it's not saying.
No, I just, I just wanted your opinion on that. I feel like I trust your media literacy.
Yeah, it's, but it is, it's so, the story is so dark and it's so, you know, like a lot of it is about like, oh, if something has been perpetrated upon you, like what is the reasonable reaction to that? And like, I feel like the first half of the first season might make you think that it's saying that the reasonable reaction to that is like mass murder. But it's not actually endorsing that. So that's where I think, again, it's like all about like, well, like I could understand why you had to like tap out if I get it, but I think it would be a mistake to say that like that was what the story was saying. But it's also not saying, I feel like the sad part of this story is incredibly sad at the end. And like, in the end, it's like, oh, well, it's like kind of like humanity will never change. So it feels pretty, pretty horrible at the end of the story. And man, but could you imagine this being the story when you were watching season one? You know, like, it's just, it's not that it couldn't be this story, but like, it just feels very different. And it's surprising. It's surprising. It's shocking. And like I said, it's hard for me to say like I fully recommend it, but I also feel like I have not seen anime's equal in like the subjects that it depicts and approaches, even if I don't like ultimately like the hopelessness of it. I was like, well, wow, no one else is, maybe Berserk like is like at a level of, but like that's so much more like fantastical and like than this is.
You don't believe the happy-go-lucky, I think Berserk's.
Oh man, it's gonna be so happy. Probably will be. It'd be weird. You're like, all right.
And then Fire Touch a Girl goes on to become a civil rights hero. What do you call it? Guts and Casca marry and have a, what do you call it, a long, happy life together.
But yeah, and so I think also, Al, since you brought it up, I wanted to mention that I've heard that like the manga ending was like very controversial, mm-hmm. but like, the anime ending has been like much more positive. And so like the manga readers who were like mad or whatever at the ending, like have been now superseded by like the anime watchers are like, no, it was a good ending. Like it was, why did you guys hate the ending? It was like a good ending. And I did hear that they tweaked a couple of things. Mm-hmm. Not that they changed it, but just, like, make it more, like, the mangaka's, like, message more clear in a couple of places. I've never read the manga, so I don't know how much tweaking we're talking about here. To make it, like, just more clear, like, this is what they meant, or, like, this is, you know, what's happening here. But, like, yeah, overall, it's been a generally, I think, positive to the ending.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I know. Even like both, I didn't know that exactly happened, but I do know that like there was just a lot of like hot takes on both sides of like, this was bad, this was good, this was, you know, problematic, this was not problematic, this was, you know, I had mixed feelings about it.
I mean, I guess any, you know, big series, I guess that's just inevitable, but it sounds like there was a lot of misinterpreting of this story.
But that was the other thing that I heard a lot of. Misinterpret works that have a very clear message on either way of like, I don't know what you read, but like, clearly the idea was fascism is bad.
But I don't even just mean the politics of the story. Just like...
Yeah, people being like, I thought that was the way it was supposed to end. That was a stinky ending that like just came out of nowhere. Or
like just misinterpretations of like characters' motivations or like just like all kinds of stuff that like, you know, it is again sort of the media literacy. Like, oh, I don't think you're reading this scene like correctly. Or like the whole like, endorsement versus like depiction and endorsement, or like, oh, I personally wouldn't like that, so therefore it doesn't make sense that that happened. And I was like, yeah, but like, remember, like, this character has been through like XYZ, so like, think about how they would react to a situation or something. So also, all you people who were like, why is Armin in this story? He is the most useless character. Ha 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 ha, fuck you. Like, talk about people who don't have any, like, media literacy or, like, understanding how stories work. Yeah, but I think I'm overall, like, I've felt very exhausted by the end of watching these specials. But I think just, like, ultimately...
Glad it's over.
I'm glad that I watched it, and I am glad it's over because it's been 10 years since the first season. And earlier this year, I talked about another series that also was having its 10-year anniversary, which was Free. And as we know, Attack on Titan Free, basically the same thing. Same messages.
Same controversy. Like, was Haru pro or anti-fascist by the end of Free?
So weird to have both of them, like, ending this year. I don't know. Like, something about that is very strange. I guess I think Free ended last year, but it didn't come out in English until this year. So, but yeah, 10 years ago. For first season of Titan. Yeah, Ally, if you end up finishing it, of course, I want to hear your thoughts. And for any of our listeners, I'm just so curious, you know, like, I couldn't tell if Titan was still big. You know, we've had this conversation before, right? But the day that it came out on Crunchyroll, when it dropped, Crunchyroll was broken for, like, a couple of hours where, like, I was, like, ready to watch it, and I couldn't watch it because nothing was working. So, still had at least a little bit left in the tank there. Yeah, but I am really glad that it's over.
For better or for worse,
yeah.
It's over.
It's over.
Hallelujah.
All right, so that wraps up another episode of The Speakeasy, and we'll see you next month.
See you next time, guys.